Chapter 19. Party Over. "Well, Jarhead," Cassandra said, hands on her hips. "I tried to convince them to keep you here and have either Samson or Gallant continue your training, but the powers that be thought it best you stick with me. That's probably the right thing to do anyway. You're so slow at morphing, I'd be embarrassed to pass you off to anyone else. They might think I didn't teach you anything."
"We couldn't have that, now could we?"
Trace returned with a large helping of sarcasm. Was she trying to put him in his place or push him away? And why lie about wanting him on the team? Remembering his agreement with Magdalene, he bit back the urge to expose her fabricated story. He would be patient. He would be forbearing. He would put up with her insults. The clues he had gleaned about her past life from Archon Ramus and Arcus Magdalene awoke some compassion within him. Her history with Goldbow he knew. Her life before death was a mystery he wanted to unlock, though she guarded the key ferociously. If he could understand what she had gone through, he would probably find some common ground with her. The old black-and-white analog clock read 5:48 a.m. They stood inside the auditorium of Trevex A, where the cherubs had received their first orientation after stumbling dumbstruck off the bus 2 months ago. Today they graduated, changed their names to whatever they had chosen, and received their initial assignments. Except for him. While Trace had received his assignment, stick with Cassandra and work with her team, he would not join the others front and center to receive the Halo Sword pin and handshakes from Archon Ramus and the other instructors. Cassandra tugged at the lapel of his jacket.
"And where did you get the suit?" she asked critically.
"Brown?
Really?
I picked it up at a department store and a cheap one. Look, your colors are blue and gray, okay? Wearing brown makes you look like a walking turd."
"Thanks."
She twisted her designer watch around her wrist until she could see its face.
"I'd better get up there.
Say hi to Priscilla for me if she shows up."
"Will do."
Cassandra strutted off. Trace took a seat at the rear and watched as the cherubs and a host of other Ash Angels, mostly instructors and trainers, gradually filed into the auditorium. Ramus, Athena, and other staff he didn't recognize sat up front behind a podium. As always, his trainer outshone everyone in the fashion department. Her sleek black skirt with a slanted hem and lacy button-up shirt highlighted a figure she had shaped to stun, her blonde hair spilling in curls over her shoulders. Among her more plainly attired colleagues, she seemed like the guest of honor.
"My son, there you are."
Trace turned to find Lear standing in the aisle dressed in a pair of jeans and a rumpled gray t-shirt. Trace rose and took his extended hand, Lear pulling him in for a quick man hug.
"I don't know if anyone told you, but I failed my AME, so I won't be graduating."
"Oh, I know," Lear said, face souring as he settled in next to Trace. "That's why I'm dressed like this. A subtle protest, you see."
Trace wondered who would understand it.
"Thanks for the support, but I probably deserve to fail."
His Ash Angel father practically shot up from his seat.
"Deserve to? Now you shut your mouth. You listen to your old man, Lear. Only in Ramus's universe could a man orchestrate the demise of 14 dreads and save a pop star from some horrible fate and still fail an AME. Let me tell you, you got fans. There are pictures of you all over in the Scholus office. T-shirts, too."
"There are not."
"Okay, so I'm the only one with a picture, but I swear I saw one of the cute little analysts wearing a Trace is the Man t-shirt this morning."
Trace laughed.
"Well, if I keep up my insubordinate ways, maybe I can meet her when Ramus has me emptying your garbage cans until I reach my sixth ascendancy."
Seeing Cassandra up front reminded him of something.
"So I hear you had a little lunch date with my trainer. Had a really good talk about me."
Lear winced.
"Yeah, I ended up saying a bit more than I probably should have. She's really persuasive, what with the gifts she has and all."
"Sorry."
"So she beautied it out of you?"
"Yeah," he nodded.
"And let me tell you, the beauty way is fantastic. Had me singing songs all afternoon."
A polite cough turned their attention to the aisle.
"Good morning, Trace. How'd you do?"
Trace's eyes widened. A young Priscilla with her hair down and wearing a knee-length skirt. She almost seemed like a different person altogether, but her large brown eyes and round face were unmistakable. She smiled back at him tentatively, still a little uneasy in her modern clothes. She wore flats, apparently not ready for pumps or heels. "I am fine." He rose and bestowed an awkward hug on her. "You look great."
"Yes, well, thank you. Dr. Oberon says I need to embrace the present day and learn to integrate. So, here I am, and feeling a bit exposed, I confess. Still, the good doctor has been very helpful. I am feeling much brighter, thanks to you, of course, and the wonderful Dr. Oberon. I owe you both a great deal."
"Don't mention it. Dr. Oberon is very good." She lowered her voice to a whisper.
"You know, I think he may have designs on me."
"Really? How can you tell?" he whispered back.
"Well, he asked if I were romantically inclined toward you since you rescued me. I told him I hadn't thought about you in that way at all, not even once. I believe he was trying to see if I was available."
"Great," he congratulated her, trying to sound enthusiastic. The Ash Angels certainly hadn't spared his self-esteem a good thrashing. After graduation, he thought he might go spend more time with Scarlet and Mindy.
"And are you and Cassandra getting on any better?" she inquired.
He shrugged. "Hard to say."
"Well, I was outraged to hear they won't let you graduate today. I've only heard good things about you from the others I've talked to, the most excellent doctor included. Cassandra must be an implacable judge."
"It wasn't her call, but don't worry about it," Trace said dismissively. "I just need a little more polish is all." One of the people on the stand rang a silver bell 3 times, and the room quieted as people hurried to their seats. Priscilla bid him a quick farewell, and Trace returned to his place next to Lear. "Does this suit make me look like a walking turd?" he asked Lear quietly. Lear laughed uproariously just as the room settled, and all eyes turned questioningly upon them. "Sorry," Lear apologized. Everyone turned back around, and Lear continued to chuckle for a few moments before replying,
"A little, yeah. Cassandra tell you that?"
"You guessed it. Well, pay attention. She's the best-dressed Ash Angel I've ever seen." The graduation started with a prayer from an Ash Angel history instructor named Rosemary. Trace had missed most of her classes due to his training with Cassandra and regretted it. Once the prayer finished, Archon Ramus came forward and clutched the sides of the podium. "Graduating Ash Angels of the class of 2020, he began with a practiced air of pomp. "Welcome to this first marker of progress in your second life. Since the death of Christ, Ash Angels have blessed the earth doing good works and bringing hope and protection to the weak and downtrodden. Archaeological evidence suggests that dreads have walked among the children of men even longer than we have. But for every evil they perpetrate, the Ash Angels have done 10-fold more for the cause of goodness. You now take up this cause as the work of your new life. It is with great pleasure and confidence that I recommend this group of new Ash Angels for service. You are one of the most successful classes in recent years. Only one of you not graduating and moving on to full operational status." Lear coughed noisily, another protest, and Trace had to resist the urge to let fly a middle finger. He knew Ash Angels could turn to dreads, but how much evil one could do before that transformation was not entirely clear. While Cassandra's insults and dishonesty indicated a little latitude, in his own mind he viewed it like a driver's license point limit, and Ramus simply wasn't worth a point. Once Ramus finished with his introductory remarks, each Ash Angel was called forward, given the halo sword pin, and then Ramus announced the graduate's Ash Angel name to the crowd. Priscilla stuck with Sapphire and blushed the entire time. Trace felt a little left out by the end, but amused himself by watching Cassandra trying to act like she cared about anything going on. She bounced her foot impatiently, visually inspected the auditorium as if looking for any points where dreads might pop through the ceiling, stared at her watch as if trying to use mental powers to speed time, and was so preoccupied she failed to even smile at Ramus's jokes. She had probably heard them all before. With applause and another prayer, it ended. Athena rushed to the podium as everyone got up to go and told the new graduates to head to TrevX-D to receive their Ash Angel phones, cover names, and first assignments. Most would ship out to other states and situations, while some would remain to do further specialized training and work within the hallways of TrevX or other Ash Angel operations centers. Trace lingered in the aisle, waiting to talk to Cassandra to see what came next, but Lear waved him back over to his seat.
All right, Trace, Lear said, rubbing his hands together. While the rest go fill out more forms, it's time for us to have a Trace Ascendancy party.
A what?
You got your first bestowal, and hence your first ascendancy. It's traditional to throw a party, though we usually don't for the first one, but hey, seemed like you could use a little recognition right around now.
Thanks, Lear. But I've got to find Cassandra and find out what I'm supposed to do.
She's coming, he assured him.
So this was planned?
Lear slapped him on the back.
Of course! It's off-site. We're not going to waste our perfect taste buds on TrevX cafeteria sludge. Ash Angels don't have to puke, but I've come close while eating what they serve around here.
You don't have to eat it, Trace reminded him.
Oh, I deal with the normal human employees around here from time to time and end up at lunches more frequently than I'd like.
Anyway, I'll take you and the newly minted Sapphire in the Buick. I'll pick you up at your apartment around 11:30. Cassandra, Corinth, and Goldbow will meet us at the restaurant.
That sounds great. Goldbow is back then?
Did he go somewhere?
He didn't fly back with us from Seattle, Trace explained. I think Argus Mars had him doing something.
Lear led him toward the exit.
Goldbow answered his phone and said he was coming, so I guess so.
At that moment, Archon Ramus passed with Athena in tow. He avoided Trace's gaze and regarded Lear's disheveled appearance with disdain. Lear smiled back defiantly. Athena glanced up from her clipboard and patted Trace lightly on the arm.
Don't feel bad, sweetie. I'm sure you'll qualify next time.
Trace gave her a thumbs up in response and looked around for Cassandra, who had apparently bolted out another door.
So where are we going? Trace asked Lear after Athena and Ramus had moved on.
Don't worry, my friend. You'll love it.
Max Steak and Shakes. Trace loved it. Long-legged waitresses in stretchy pants and t-shirts roller-skated by with fluid grace, balancing trays crammed full of sugary drinks and fatty sandwiches. Modern rock blared from ceiling speakers, and sporting events played on TVs hanging about the room. They took a table in the center of the chaotic dining area. Their waitress, Nora, whirred around them, expertly placing their food in front of them while somehow still maintaining her balance. Meat, onions, mango peach shake, homestyle fries, all of it unhealthy and delicious. He could eat a mountain of it with no consequences to his weight or clogged arteries. Heaven indeed. Lear and Sapphire flanked him, Corinth separating a tense Cassandra and Goldbow on the other side of the table. Fortunately, Cassandra had dressed down in jeans and a tank top, so she didn't seem like a royal princess lunching with the peasants. A jovial Lear tried to keep a conversation going to little avail. Priscilla couldn't keep her eyes off the roller skates, and Corinth couldn't keep his eyes off the roller skaters. Cassandra and Goldbow stuck to their food, which left Trace as the target of most of Lear's banter. Trace didn't mind. Nothing could go wrong with a steak sandwich and a mango peach shake in hand. Trace finished his second shake before trying to get a text in Cassandra's attention.
So you want to drop any hints on what's up for the next assignment?
No.
The team?
You're on it.
The price of beans in China?
Too high.
My morphing performance?
Sucks.
Lear laughed.
Give up, Trace. She must be texting an Arcus, or the Almighty himself.
So how did you die, Trace? Corinth asked.
All eating stopped, all eyes glued to Trace. He swallowed the bite of juicy steak sandwich he was chewing.
Oberon would want him to tell the tale without shame. But the ugly feelings wanted attention, and he just couldn't do it in a place like this with all these people.
You want to tell the story, Lear?
You sure?
Lear asked, putting his hand on Trace's shoulder.
Yeah, one sec. Waitress, could I get another shake, please?
She nodded affirmatively, brow creasing as if worried for his health, or perhaps disgusted at his gluttony, and skated off. Cassandra resumed her texting, and Lear got to it.
Well, Trace here was married to his gorgeous wife, Teresa, for 3 years. She started having some, extracurricular activities with a guy she worked with.
Extracurricular activities?
Priscilla asked. Sex, Cassandra provided bluntly. Priscilla gasped and put her hand to her mouth.
Right.
Lear continued. Anyway, Trace found out at a party Teresa's company put on. Trace went to pack up his stuff. Teresa came home. Then this guy she was cheating with, Simon, drives up to the house and tells him his wife has gone crazy. She has, and shows up with a gun looking for Teresa and Simon. Trace gets in the way of a bullet meant for Simon and wrecks his truck trying to drive himself to the hospital. Did I get everything, Trace? He nodded. It still hurt to hear it, but the general sympathy at the table felt good. Priscilla's eyes actually watered. Corinth said,
Dude, that sucks.
How about you, Cassandra? Trace prompted.
She didn't look up, absorbed in her phone.
You tell it, Goldbow.
Goldbow, startled but pleased, perked up.
Cassie here was a detective in Chicago. She'd been with a new partner for about 2 weeks. They went out one night, and this new detective tells her to stay in the car while he goes into some building, some abandoned theater called, get this, the Red Angel. Cassie waits for a while and decides to follow him in. When she goes in, she can hear his partner begging for his life. She pulls a weapon and goes in to rescue him, but the last thing she remembers is a loud bang and falling to the floor, probably capped by the guy shaking down her partner.
Corinth, Trace continued.
It was a counter-terror op in Iraq. We got intel from one of our sources that some terrorist honchos were meeting in a school building. I was spotting to direct the go-no-go for the airstrike. The bad guys show up on time and I ordered the go. But a boatload of kids shows up right after the meeting starts. I try to abort, but it's too late. So I come out of cover and start firing my weapon into the air to get the kids to move off. One of the sentries dropped me with 2 hits to the belly. I bled out on the way back to base.
Mine was similar, Goldbow said. My team hit a Taliban base in Afghanistan. We attacked, but more guys were there than the intel indicated. We pulled back to reposition. I got blown apart by an RPG trying to cover the retreat of my squad. The SCOLAs had a hard time figuring out where they should spread my ash. They had a few spots to choose from.
Lear?
Priscilla prompted.
My theater company wasn't extremely popular or well-to-do, so we ended up playing and staying in some places that, shall we say, attracted a rather base sort of people. A colleague of mine, Jerry, and I were trying to hail a cab in a seedier part of town when we got mugged. Jerry was a cocky idiot and decided to take the knife-wielding assailant down using his stage-fighting skills. He got himself stabbed. I intervened and got stabbed worse. Like Trace, the SCOLAs gave me a low percentage chance of having died a sacrificial death because the reports were unclear about whether I was helping Jerry or myself. Jerry, of course, told the cops he was trying to protect me, but here I am.
I suppose only I remain,
Priscilla said. From her fidgeting hands, Trace could tell she felt about as comfortable talking about her death as he did about his. But Oberon's advice no doubt ran through her mind, too.
It is quite simple. I was helping slaves on my husband's plantation escape to the north. I did this without my husband's permission. He caught me after I had said farewell to my latest beneficiary and beat me to death with a fire poker. I no longer felt an attachment to the man, so my heart, perhaps, is not as broken as Trace's is. Still, the memory is fresh and painful.
Hey, Cassie, Goldbo said after she didn't so much as emote after Priscilla's story. Are you trying to win a texting contest or something? Big clothing sale somewhere?
She held up one finger to signal for him to wait, and Trace could tell something had completely preoccupied her because it wasn't the middle one. She continued to pointedly ignore them for a few more seconds while Trace slurped down the recently arrived mango peach shake.
What the hell?
Cassandra exclaimed, tapping her phone. Is anyone else's phone down? Everyone dove for their pockets. Trace didn't bother. His normal person phone wouldn't provide any information.
Mine's out, Corinth confirmed. Bricked, Goldbo added.
Priscilla handed Trace her phone.
Is this out?
She asked. Trace inspected the screen. The signal strength was zero, and the phone had gone into lockdown, the screen presenting a graphic of a lock with searching for active typed underneath.
Hers is locked out with no signal strength, Trace reported. Do they lock up when they can't get service?
Yep, Cassandra said.
As a precaution, the phones store no information on them. Everything is saved and recalled from servers in real time. If the phone is stolen, there's nothing that can be gleaned from a SIM card or local memory, and they can disable the phone remotely. Unfortunately, it also means that if service goes down, your phone is a brick.
Does service go down a lot?
Hardly ever. But this might be different. I was texting Maggie. She said there was some strange chatter over at Trevex, and her link to them went completely dead just a few minutes ago. She was trying to see if it was just a glitch, but... Well, I'm...
Cassie, Corinth interrupted. Look.
All eyes went to one of the TV screens, now with a scrolling red marquee over a helicopter shot of Trevex propane. Trace clenched his fingers around his shake. Trevex was a blackened ruin. It looked like it had been bombed. Belching smoke and fumes pulsed into the sky from flaming pipes and craters where storage tanks once stood. Smaller explosions erupted periodically as the inferno ejected fireballs into the sky. Lear tossed a wad of money on the table, and chairs flew backward as they abandoned their table and scrambled for the door, eliciting startled glances from the clientele. Cassandra's caddy waited on the curb, and Goldbo still had the Taurus. Cassandra took charge. Lear, get Priscilla to a safe house. Jawheads with me. Goldbo, you and Corinth follow.